Phil, are you ready to start a show?
Yes, I need to put my complying teeth.
So we're recording right now, as we do at the beginning of every show. Do you leave this part in? I can't remember. I haven't heard the start of the show. Do you leave this part in? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
First official day of fall. Ha ha ha. That's the name of today's show. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
And today is the 23rd Thursday, September 23rd. Are you ever going to come home from the trailer, you think?
I believe today.
You said that yesterday.
Nah, I know, but it's my daughter's birthday tomorrow, so probably come home today and go see her tomorrow and the lovely children.
Miss. Melanie Patterson was, when I moved here in 1989, Phil. When I moved here, I got to know Fred. I met Fred in, I guess, I don't know, remember, May or June. I came here early August. Fred was on vacation. We got together. And very shortly after that, he invited me to his daughter's 7th birthday party.
Oh.
And what birthday is that daughter celebrating now, Fred?
39.
Whoa.
Just for perspective, when you guys met in the summer of 89, I was like 7 months old.
Wow.
Yeah.
You were just a head, right? With
a giant head and a tiny little green bean.
Mm-hmm. Baby Phil.
He was just a big head rolling around with a couple of strings hanging.
Yeah. Mrs. Hong, you've given birth to a beach ball with dark black hair.
I'm thinking more like a cantaloupe. What's all those skin things about?
We were talking to Phil before the show started about living with his family and Pearl getting used to living in Canada. And she's starting to get a little restless because she thinks you're supposed to go to the market every day.
The idea of buying groceries to last a week baffles her. It's just like, Why is there such a big fridge in this house? And I'm like, because we don't go to the market every day. It's not a thing. It's like, well, but why do you guys like staying home? And it's like, because we like staying home and this is an expensive place.
And then Fred asked you, you know, why don't you two get your own place? And you said that would seem, what did you say?
Yeah, it would seem a bit cold, like you're being ostracized from the rest of your family, because usually families stick together, and it's not a cultural thing for us, it's a Hong thing. So, like, we like living together, right? It's good to have to come, it's good to have someone to come home to, even if you're single, even if, you know, things are happening.
That's from my end.
Yeah, what is that there, Fred? Yeah, I just, us. No, I'm sorry, Phil, I heard a noise.
Yeah, it sounds like a sump pump.
Yeah.
It's like,
and what's that noise?
I think it was the fan in my fridge.
It's very unprofessional.
Anyway, that I find that like that's just crazy because you're in Canada now and our culture dictates that no, a young couple usually gets their own place to, you know, forge their own way and be their own people.
Yeah.
So why anyway?
Well, Pearl's case is not, you know, her problem isn't with other members of the household. She loves my family. Like, Liz and Jen are her favorite buddies.
What's that? Yeah, you think she does. Yeah.
I'm honored. Well, they pop in all the time saying hi and if they needed help, and they go out on walks all the time, that sort of thing. But the problem with Pearlie is it's like she's used to the idea that it's 38 degrees outside all the time. You get out your shorts, you go to the mall. You know, it's not like we have the same lifestyle here in Canada.
No,
she's
we
just
don't.
Getting used to it, you know, new immigrant in a new place. Right.
But if she's getting restless now, what's it going to be like once November, December, January, February, and March hit and you're pretty much confined to the indoors?
I think it's from a different angle. It's like when the weather does hit, she'll realize why.
Maybe.
That sort of thing. Yeah.
Well,
she loved the snow. She loves snow. I know that.
The thing you can do is what I suggested. Let's get a baby in that oven.
Make a cantaloupe.
Make the cantaloupe.
I know. You know how many like broken relationships and marriages have been fixed just by having a child?
That's what they say you should do.
It's the perfect remedy.
I have a broken relationship.
No, as you know, you're right.
Phil, it was just a joke.
Phil, if you read any of the women's magazines, as we do, it says this baby saved our relationship.
I saw the latest issue of Chatelaine. It says they opened a Patreon account.
Is your husband screwing around? We'll get him to give you a baby.
Yeah, that's right. Is your husband spending too much time putting boxes together at an undisclosed location overnight?
And now two new recipes for ambrosia salad.
Then you need a baby in your womba. Phil, are you ready to begin the program official?
I guess.
All right.
The following episode of Humble and Fred is brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Health Gauge, Bodog, and a newest sponsor, Doer, D-U-E-R, the world's most comfortable pants. If you'd like to talk to Humble and Fred, we have an Instagram account, Humble and Fred Radio. And now from the remote headquarters of the Humble and Fred Show, here are Humble and Fred.
Yeah, I'm on day three of wearing the same pants. I don't know if they seem fine. I love wearing them so much. Doer, D-U-E-R. I'm doing it. I'm wearing these pants. Phil, I don't know what I did. Oh, there it is. I got Phil's t-shirt here.
Those Doer pants.
Yes.
They breathe really nice.
Yes.
They're not the fart catchers that a regular pair of jeans would be, right? Yeah. So you could get 3 days out of them, even though that is a bit much.
Does it seem like a bit much?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about their fart-catching ability, but the world's most comfortable pants for men and women are Doer, made from natural materials combined with technical achievements. It achieves breathability. Again, I should put some... I should put some commas in some of these sentences. You don't have to sacrifice performance, Fred. I know you've been worried. Why are you laughing?
I should put your commas in these.
Well, it's just one run-on sentence.
The comma is such a beautiful invention.
Fred, you don't have to suffer anymore. I know you've been suffering and sacrificing performance when you want to dress up or go in style when you're on the move.
Yep.
And I've been wearing them off and on. I mean, not 3 days straight, but in parts of 3 days, I'm wearing these stretch denims. And they are good.
Well, didn't you get Phil's pair as well?
Well, what happened was I got my pair. Right. And then Phil was supposed to get a pair that were a little bit bigger. And what happened was I got two pairs at my size. So I can't even, you know, and I'm sure the Doer people, when they hear this, are going to make an amends for Phil. But I got two pairs.
Well, why don't you switch them up? Why are you wearing one for 3 days? Switch them up, brother. Switch them up.
That's a great question, because the other ones that I did get are the right waist size, and but they're not the right length in the leg, so I have to go get them tailored.
Yeah, but back in the 90s, you looked great in capri pants, so just wear them.
Like roll them all the way up?
Remember you used to wear the capri pants throughout the 90s?
Yeah,
they were nice.
But I these are too long for me. So you're saying I would just roll them all the way up.
I thought they were too short. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, I was going with your bit, though. I was like, sure, okay. Well, yes, I used to wear capri pants. And what I would do is I would take oversized pants and I would roll them all the way up to just below my knees.
Remember what Bingo Bob had a while where he was wearing capri pants?
We called the long shorts.
Yeah, I was sort of uncomfortable around him during that period because it was all new to me to see guys in pants like that. Soft hands, capri pants. What's going on, Bobby?
That's funny. I was uncomfortable during that period of his capri pants. Anyway, we want you to go to Doer, Doer.ca, and put in the promo code we've supplied for you, HumbleANDFred15, for 15% off your next order. All right. Now, this is the show. Ted Wallachin will join us. Been a comedian, a host, a broadcaster, a friend of this show for many years. Ted, you know, was one of those guys that you worked with, I worked with, we worked with. And now he's starting a podcast, Fred. Have you heard of those?
Yeah. Remember, we Remember, we recommended that to him some time ago and offered to give him the studio at his at his convenience.
Yeah.
At the time, he didn't take us up on it. You know, I was doing some research yesterday, Howard.
Oh, you were? Did you do some research? Did you go to an institute?
No, I actually was. Did you know? I didn't know this. This escaped me. But back in April, there was rumors that he had died.
Because of COVID.
Yeah, so the word was out that Ted Walishin had died, and I read an article that Joe Warmington, I think this is back in April, had written saying that he had heard Ted had died and then was phoning people to get some comments on this, you know, legendary radio guy who had been the morning host at CFRB for 10 years, and then quickly realized that, no, Ted wasn't dead. So, a funny little story.
Yeah, this is funny. I mean, wait a second. Are you saying that?
Saying the rumors of my death have been greatly exaggerated or something?
Yeah. Did Joe actually print the article or?
No, Joe. The article was about Joe hearing that Ted was dead and then embarking to get a bunch of comments about Ted, what a great guy he was, you know, like a post-mortem thing.
Yeah.
And then while he's making some calls, finds out that no, he wasn't dead. In fact, I think he called John Moore to get his comments on his predecessor. And John said, no, he's not dead. What are you talking about? He's still alive.
When do you, you know, I don't want to start telling this story until I find out. I'm going to do some research and find out what were the years that Ted, maybe you could do this, Phil.
I know. 96 to 06.
He was the morning guy from 96 to 06?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that's
what
true.
I read in the, this is what my research told me.
Well, the reason I don't think it's true.
Why?
Well, I don't know if the dates are
true. Moore came in 2003 and became the morning man in 2006. Remember, Moore did a lot of entertainment stuff and what have you.
So I think that they were going to get rid of him. Or they did get rid of him in 2000 and... No, I got fired in 2006. So I guess he was finished. He was finished in 2006. I don't know if Moore got the morning show right away. I think it was Bill Carroll after Ted Walsh.
Okay, maybe. Yeah, right.
The reason I say that is because when I got fired a year after you got fired, it was July of 2006. In September, Pat Holiday took me out for lunch and asked me, we had a discussion about me doing the morning show at CFRB.
Really?
Yep.
What happened to that?
They decided, like, I was kind of interested in it, thinking, okay, well, this will be something I could do. And then they went with Bill Carroll. In fact, it was Bill Carroll. I mean, I got to talk to Ted about this. It was Bill Carroll who was kind of like assistant PDing at the time. And I think it was Carroll who sort of suggested me in a meeting. And then Pat came to talk to me. But it didn't work out somehow. But Moore didn't take over in 2006. I think it was Bill. Yeah, I think Bill decided in the end that that he should do it.
But anyway, to answer your original question, what I read yesterday is it was a 10-year run from 96 to 06.
Yes.
That may be loose.
No, that's correct. Generally,
yeah.
And I think that was what they were looking to replace Ted, and Bill was part of the committee or whatever. I think Bill was doing afternoons at the time.
Yeah, and Bill, he's his own story, and then somebody from KFI, California, Los Angeles, rolling through town or heard him somehow and ends up hiring him. He goes to California for a few years, makes a fortune, literally.
Do you think so? What would they have paid him at KFI?
Well, Howard, enough that I think it set him up nicely for the rest of his life.
Wow.
Because it would have been American dollars, you know, talk radio in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah. That's serious money.
And now, if now he's back in Ottawa, and I know he's the morning man at CFRA, but, you know, in Canada, there's ceilings to those jobs, a lot less than American. And if you see the compound that Bill has bought on the river there in Ottawa.
Yeah.
You know, I know real estate's cheaper in Ottawa, but not that cheap. Mm.
Yeah, he would have been doing, he did 9 to noon, I think, or... Yeah, they were grooming him to replace this legendary morning guy at KFI in Los Angeles.
Bill Handel.
Bill Handel.
Yeah.
But I would say that his contract was definitely seven figures. He would have been, it would have been over a million something.
Oh, yeah.
Easily.
In U.S. Yeah. U.S. So when he when he carted that money back home, there was a pretty nice exchange on it, I would believe.
Yeah.
Anyway. And I think, and again, here we are talking on behalf of Bill, but I think it just got to the point. He was, you know, we were talking about this with John Hastings yesterday. You know, he loves Los Angeles so far. But how many people we've talked to over the years that go there and they just reach this tipping point where they've had enough and they come back to Canada. And I think Bill was one of those guys. His, you know, his wife was from Quebec and his roots were here. And he, you know, he traded, and he had a nice home in Los Angeles. He traded that climate, that home, that lifestyle for Ottawa. And you want to talk about a cultural shock, a culture shock. I mean, climate and pretty much everything.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, that'll be interesting. We'll have some more broadcast, you know, discussions coming up. I was corresponding yesterday with one of the members of the CPP party who ran in Canada's election, which, you know, in typical let's be like the Americans. I got a great story about how the People's Party of Canada felt the elections were rigged.
Why don't they just shut up?
But first, here's Fred to talk about the Chamber Plan, man. Chamber.
Yeah, the Chamber Plan, Canada's number one plan for group benefits for small business in Canada. It's Canada's leading group benefit plan for small companies. And if you want to become one of those small companies that is part of the Chamber Plan, go to chamberplan.ca today. You get a free quote, and you can read all sorts of testimonials on how it's worked for other companies. We're talking dental insurance and medical insurance and therapies, all sorts of plans that one would never believe attainable for a small company. But when 30,000 Canadian businesses get together and create the profile of a large company, listen, magic happens. It really does. I mean, we keep telling you about it. Several Humble and Fred listeners have brought their small businesses into the Chamber Plan, and it's worked well for them. So chamberplan.ca, where to go, get a free quote today, and, you know, titillate your employees.
Yes. I'm looking for the actual story. I had it here, but just the short of it is, God, this is ridiculous. You know, I put these things away. No, Dan, it's not because it's on a different screen. Oh, yeah, here it is. After Canada's far-right party loss, followers dub election rigged. Gee, I wonder where they got that playbook. This is the most pathetic thing I think I've ever seen in Canadian politics. Is they're just such little Trump wannabes.
Yes.
You know, it's almost like, what? So here's the story. World supporters of Maxime Bernier and People's Party of Canada call election rigged. Some supporters have taken the black pill and believe the election was rigged against them because they won nothing. They couldn't. It wouldn't be because most people think they're ninnies.
No. Maxime didn't even get his seat.
Yeah.
Neither did Annamie. What's her name? Annamie Paul or whatever. She Annamie lost Paul. Hers.
Yeah. Yep.
From the Green Party.
She wound up fourth.
Did she really?
Yeah. Marcy Ian from formerly of CTV won.
Mm-hmm. A large percentage of PPC supporters online are taking solace in the idea that the election was rigged. The hashtag hashtag rigged quickly began to pick up traction on Twitter. And yeah, the supporters are saying the fix was in before the election. Again, they don't really have any proof, and they've got, it's just something they want to say so they can be like their friends in America.
That's the extent of it, you know, to be infatuated with that stuff. You know, I had this conversation again yesterday with my wife and Dan Duran. It's this, so much of this stuff has really exposed the percentage, the element of Canada that's a little off kilter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you look at the vaccination numbers, they're holding pretty steady right now. So it's giving you a pretty clear indication of what percentage of our population just ain't going to do it. And then when you try to get their explanation for why, none of it's really valid. And it's, you know, just based on misinformation and hysteria and nonsense. So to buy into that, and so now the election fraud, like, really?
Yeah.
Election fraud here?
No, I know.
Like if the NDP only got 25 seats, believe me, CPP or whatever you call it, CCP. What is it, Canadian?
People's CPP? Party. PPC.
Oh, PPC.
PPC.
Chances are pretty good you didn't get much. An established party like the NDP got 24 or 25 seats. So this upstart whack job party, they're surprised they didn't get, they're not out of the blocks yet.
But you know, yeah, but that's, you're talking about them like that's a rational thing. Like, yeah. You know, what you just mm-hmm. said might apply if we were talking about the Reform Party or, mm-hmm. you know, we're talking 20 years ago when there was a bit of a movement from the right of the right wing of the Conservative Party. There was a bit of a push and a movement to go a bit more conservative, but this is a different animal. This is just a bunch of Canadians that are, I mean, it really is something else. I'm going to tell you about a guy, and I don't even want to give him publicity, but I will. He ran for the PPC. His name is Daryl Mackey, M-A-C-K-I-E. He's already blocked me on Instagram, and one of the reasons he did is because one of our listeners alerted me to a video he put up, which he's now taken down because he's a coward. And it's him with his yellow star on, sitting in Tim Hortons. And he's filming himself as he waits to get arrested because he's not wearing a mask in Tim Hortons. And so the video is him. And as he goes in and out of frame, you can see the yellow star. And he's talking about freedoms and rights and Canadians. And, you know, it's just absurd is what it is.
At what point do these pinheads open up a newspaper, or, oh, of course, they don't believe newspapers. They don't believe the mainstream media. They don't believe fake news. All the labor lawyers that have been asked and have said, you know, all these laws in place now in the workplace that you must be vaccinated or maybe lose your job are all valid when it's tied to a pandemic. I mean, it doesn't even need to be tied to a pandemic. And the overwhelming number of scientists and doctors that have endorsed masks, you know, they're not the be all to end all. They're not the total solution, but they really help in stopping the spread.
Yeah.
So that guy sitting there and Tim Hortons making a film wearing his shirt and no mask. I'm sorry. He's not all there. There's something wrong with him.
Well, I wish
I think this is the, you know, this is the thing that connects the dots with all these people.
Yeah, and I wanted to play the video, but he took it down and then he blocked me. And now he's made his account private. But I did take a screen cap of the messages I sent him.
So, did you?
Yeah. The first one was, take off the yellow star, you fucking asshole. That was the first one. Then I was thinking about it, and I said, by the way, the Jews in Germany had no choice because they were Jewish. Fuck, you're stupid. Mm-hmm. You know, and it kind of...
Well, he is.
Kind of devolved from there.
And to be so committed that you choose to expose that stupidity, but again, he doesn't think he's stupid, and for whatever twisted reason, whatever wrong with his brain, he thinks he's on some path to reality. I just don't listen. Howard, there's a story, a kid named Josh Archibald, Edmonton Oilers, will not get vaccinated. He calls it the plandemic. He tweets all the time, the plandemic.
Yeah.
So the Oilers have said to him, you've got to be vaccinated. Nope. He stands to lose 450. He's just a fourth line hacker, right?
Yeah.
But he stands to lose because the problem is the Oilers would go into the States all the time. And every time he'd come back, he'd have to quarantine. He'd lose like $500,000 of his $750,000 salary. Like it's one thing to be about, you know, and here's another thing. People have their reasons for not wanting to be vaccinated, and some may be valid. We don't know. But when you tweet stuff like the plandemic,
yeah, That's not his,
sort
by
of,
the way.
You sort of lose all sort of reason or sympathy for your position.
That phrase has been around since the early part of this.
Yeah,
in fact, one of the first conspiracy things I'd seen was something called the Plandemic. And then I went, okay, I'm not going down that rabbit hole. Daryl Mackey on, here's another thing, you know, it's like, so you've got these people in the PPC, and they're nothing like the Reform Party of 25, 30 years ago. They're just so, they so want to be Republicans. Mm-hmm. Here he is, of course, you know, talking about, you know, personal freedoms, which, you know, he's all for because he doesn't want to wear a mask in Tim Hortons. But of course, I will vote against abortion, says Daryl. Mm-hmm. I will not encourage abortion. I will promote personal responsibility, abstinence, and adoption.
Abstinence.
And then he says, I believe it is murdering a helpless and innocent human life. I will keep praying for hearts to change. Life begins at conception, period, says Daryl. See, these people aren't, they're no longer pretending that we're in a different country. They think they're Americans.
But even that, you know, if that's the way he feels, great. We're not going to change that. The whole issue is when you try to take that belief and place it on somebody else. Piss off, dickhead.
No.
And what bothers me about this, too, and I'm going to tell you straight up, I voted conservative this year because I could not vote for Justin Trudeau. That party gives rational, normal conservatives a bad name. That's what bugs me about this. That's what bugs me about Richard Surratt and Lou Skeezes. They give Canadian conservatism a bad name.
Sure they do. And by the way, I think...
And you get that stink on you?
Yeah.
You know, when you, anyway.
Well, I don't think anyone's surprised by that statement.
Okay, well...
That you voted conservative.
But, yeah, so... Again, and I've heard them compared to Reform, and you're dead on. It's a lot different than what the Reform movement
was. It's nothing like the Reform movement.
These people are whack jobs because Maxime Bernier was a conservative, right? Was he not?
Yeah, I think so.
And got thrown out of the caucus. So again, if you're a conservative in this country, you get that stink on you.
You know, I don't know.
Through them.
I mean, I live in the heart of the city, so I'm surrounded by, you know, a lot of liberal ridings.
Do you think?
Yeah. But I think across the country, I grew up in Western Canada, and being conservative in Alberta and, you know, parts of Saskatchewan isn't unusual. It's, you know, a lot of people in the farm and ranching industry are conservatives, they're independent. You know, there's an entrepreneurial streak to being a farmer and a rancher, so those people tend to be conservatives. I grew up around them.
I think Howard, look at the farmland around the GTA. It's all blue.
It's all blue.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not ashamed to tell you who I voted for. Who do you think I voted for?
I don't know. I think you would have considered conservative, maybe at the end just voted liberal. I don't know.
No.
You voted green?
No.
Marijuana?
No.
Conservative?
Yeah.
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 And I'll tell you why. No, I'm not surprised.
And I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem. I don't have as big a problem with Justin Trudeau and all the blackface and all the bullshit and the
and that's the least of it.
Yeah,
for me,
you know what I mean. But even the stuff with the wee stuff. I mean, it's every politician. You know, every politician's got some baggage, obviously.
Absolutely.
But what did it for me is I thought of the last election being only 2 years ago, and I thought, you know, I just can't. And I didn't think my vote was going to make it. That's the thing, is I didn't think my vote would make any difference at all. I thought Justin Trudeau would get a minority government. I didn't think it was going to make a conservative government. What I was doing was protesting the fact that he called an election. Right. Mm-hmm. So I voted conservative.
But here's another, and part of the reason I did too is because you look at 2015, 2019, his platforms. And listen, I know often whatever they promise, no matter what the party, no matter who the politician, often most of what they promise or what they pledge doesn't happen. But his is just so startlingly inept. It just blows me away. Another thing that really and by the way, did you know that you and I are in the majority, right? More people put an X beside conservative in this country than any other party.
No, I know the popular vote. Yes.
They won the popular vote. Another reason why we have to have some kind of election reform. How do you think the people in the rest of this country feel when they look at the GTA and it's all red? So the GTA, the city of Toronto really decides who is going to govern this country. I'm just, and on top of that, the party with the most votes is 30 some odd seats behind. I know that's the system, and that's what we've decided, and we have to live with it as long as it's in place. But it is time, given the fact that we have 5 and 6 parties too running, there needs to be some reform. This city should not decide government for the rest of the country.
Yeah, hang on a second, Phil. Well, having lived in 4 other provinces, but one of them being Quebec, another province that, you know, tends to have a heavier weight in deciding the country, but also it's by population. But having lived in those western provinces, you know, we often joke about, why do they hate us out there? Well, part of the reason they hate us is because of what you just stated, which is the GTA is deciding for them. You know, I've got another story out of Edson, Alberta. And this is another vaccine story. But in the smaller parts of Canada, of course, they resent Toronto because Toronto is, as you say, deciding the government for the country, and they're not as represented as they want to be. Phil, what were you going to say there, buddy?
Well, I was about to say, you know, if you don't want Toronto deciding the federal government, then, you know, that's against the 1850s concept of rep by pop, as you mentioned. Then, you know, when you include Toronto and all the regions around it, it's the third of the population of the whole country.
Yeah.
So it's just what it is. It's the number.
No.
But
no,
I would also say, though, we did try to propose reform. You might remember this. Like, we tried MMP as a concept, for example, and it was rejected by 70% of the population. And most of the folks opposed the reform live in the blue ridings. That's just that's the statistics. You don't remember the 2007 referendum? I counted those votes.
The referendum on election reform.
Yeah, we were against the idea that...
How many parties were there then?
No, there was a yes side and a no side.
I'm saying the landscape has changed. I would like to have that referendum again.
Sure. And that should be a concept. Yeah.
But Phil, besides all that, there's got to be some compensation for the fact that more people voted conservative than the most of the population in this country voted for a party.
That was the concept. MMP was to devote seats based on the number of votes the party got.
Okay.
But it was rejected by 70% of Ontario.
Well, let's not get bogged down in that. Whatever it is.
14 years ago.
Yeah. Whatever it is, a lot of the people in the country feel underrepresented by the fact. And popular vote, by the way, doesn't really. I mean, they have. That's not a new concept, that the popular vote doesn't inform the electoral college, if you will, or in our case, the parliamentary system.
Exactly. But I will say, how it's funny what you just said too, Phil, that Ontario again decided for the rest of the country that we wouldn't do that. But
you don't win an election, no matter what party you are, you don't win an election by throwing all your votes in Alberta. That's all.
No. But
the conservatives won the popular vote because they're that popular where they are. That's all.
Well, and there's a lot of people that would have voted. I think a lot of people vote conservative. And again, this whole thing started with me telling you about this idiot that I was corresponding with on the PPC. You know, that's the thing about voting, which, by the way, I do. I'd say a little bit more often, but I don't always vote liberal. I did last time. I didn't this time. I just, you know, it's how I feel. And but a lot of people can't articulate why they don't like the Conservative Party. And I used to do this joke about, you know, people used to say, "Oh, I hate Stephen Harper." I go, "Why?" They go, "I don't know." His eyes are too close together. I'm like, okay, but well, it looks like he looks like he eats babies. You know, no one really knew. They just knew they were supposed. In Toronto, it's like, well, you're supposed to not like the Conservative Party. But being from out west, it wasn't as odd for me to support a conservative candidate, because I remember being thrilled that Harper was from out west. Because in my
born in Toronto, but grew up out west.
But it was just sort of because in my lifetime, there weren't very many Western prime ministers. Joe Clark got 9 months, didn't he?
Oh, I forget.
We didn't get very long. Or was it Kim?
Remember? Yeah, she was. Well, she was never elected.
Okay.
Kim Campbell.
Kim Campbell.
Kim Stockwood.
Kim Stockwood from Shea once was was once our prime minister. Okay, before we get to Ted, here's another lunatic story from a small town in Alberta. I'm not. When Dan gets here, Dan grew up in a small town outside of Edmonton. I'm just trying to remember the name of it. But this town is a place called Edson, Alberta. If you would have not, you may not have heard of it, but I have. It's somewhere about a couple hours outside of Edmonton. Just listen to this story.
Sources tell City News that a party here in Edson, 2 hours west of Edmonton, has sent, quote, a lot of Edson residents into Edmonton's already overwhelmed and full ICUs. One person we spoke to outside of the hospital in town said she knew of a party happening outside of town 2 weeks ago that had sent some to the Edson Hospital. We're told a number of Edmonton ICU cases come from a party that was held in an attempt to get COVID-19 as a way to achieve natural herd immunity and produce antibodies.
Okay, so that's the story. This is a bunch of grown Canadians with access to information. Okay, so I just want to establish that you understand they got together so they could get COVID, thinking it would be like the measles and they would have immunity. My question, I have so many questions. How did they get enough people to think that was a good idea? Hey, Freddie, why don't you and Dahl join Rachel and I and some of our friends? We're gonna get COVID so that we can be immune and we don't have to take the vaccine.
Well, first of all, that's another example of American copycat, right? Because there was a lot of those held in the States. It's from, you know, that herd immunity mentality. Again, it just goes back. How did they get that many, Howard? It gets back to what I said earlier. It's startling. We're getting a clear indication of how much of our population is sort of off kilter or bent. Obviously, they didn't have trouble getting those people together. And so much of it is laziness and convenience. People so don't want COVID to be a thing that they're trying to talk themselves out of it. Like it doesn't exist or we shouldn't have to go through this. Only because they can't be bothered. So it's the most convenient route for them.
I'm not sure if you said it or I said it because I can no longer tell the difference. But it has been said recently on this show. We are never going to go back to normal.
No.
Actually, this wasn't said, but I'm summing up. We might get past COVID, but we're never getting past this. And unfortunately, they have this phrase. And Ted Walishin, by the way, had COVID. And he, I think, is a long hauler or whatever that phrase is. He's been having effects. The effects of COVID physically linger. But I think the effects of COVID societally and the effects of Trumpism, that's never going away in our lifetime.
No, I agree.
You know,
I agree.
What we've learned is that we have an element in Canada, whether you want to say they're off kilter or they're askew or they're misguided or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But those people, you know, the election is rigged in Canada. Come on. Fuck. I read that. I just started laughing. I'm like, you got to be kidding. This is who we are living with in this country. The election was rigged.
Fuck. I know. Where do you even go with that? Like, it's just so pathetic. And did you ask this guy, whatever his name was, from the People's Party of Canada, if he wanted to come on the show?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then he blocked me.
Yeah, they don't want to do that.
And the suck,
they don't want, the suck they, ass, they don't want to be they don't want to be asked any questions they're uncomfortable with.
And the suck took down his Tim's video, which I was going to show you.
But you know, that's part of the profile of those people. I mean, even a guy, I won't mention him, that, you know, mostly pushed back on him and threatened to sue us because you ask him valid questions that he's uncomfortable. He can't answer. He'd rather just, you know, be the big blowhard and throw out all his wisdom. And then the minute you challenge it, well, then you're gone. They want no part of that.
Yeah. So that's what we're dealing with. And, you know, as I say, it's sad. I've mentioned this a dozens of times that, you know, when March of 2020 came, all the things that we've gone through that have happened to all of us and we've experienced.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is something. If you'd have told me in March of 2020, somebody in the fall of 21 is going to say our Canadian election was rigged, I'm going, mm-hmm. Really? Why? How? How would that happen? Well, it happened, Howard. It happened.
Like, how, again, you, how simple are you that you can just follow that path?
Yeah.
Like you take the little tiny smidgen percentage of that mindset and follow it. Like it just defies all angles of logic.
I just love the idea of some guy, because, you know, a lot of, and I'm generalizing, but a lot of this anti-vax movement is being led by moms and grandmoms, and
yeah,
and but I can just see, because, you know what, guys are lazy, we really are. I mean, I'll go if Rachel says we're doing something, I'm like, okay, sure, I guess. Mm-hmm. Let's do that. So you can imagine, you know, a bunch of women, if I may say women, saying to their husbands, hey, we're going over to the Patterson's on Saturday. Yeah, what's going on then? Oh, yeah, we're all going to get COVID. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's do that then.
On the news yesterday, I saw some anti-vax thing, and one of the signs that was being, and it was being held up by an older woman, was vaccine equals poison.
Yeah.
That was the sign. And I said to Delisa, now I wonder how many of the people within that group are now going to light up a smoke.
Of course.
Which is nothing but poison. Established and proven, it's poison.
Yeah, what I don't understand is that woman, and I'd love to talk to her, she's taking a leave and naproxen, and she's taking anti-inflammatories. Those are all the same things. She's taking some prescriptions for her, you know, this. She's got a bowel issue. She smokes. She drinks. She don't come home at night. You know, she stays out late. It's the same thing, and this isn't my bit, but I saw this somewhere, and it was like, okay, if you don't believe in science, why are you protesting in front of hospitals? Because that's all that is. A hospital is a building filled with science whose prime directive is to keep you from dying. So that's the thing. You know what? That's the one thing I've never been able to figure out. I'm against the vaccine, so I'm going to go harass people that are trying to help the people dying from not taking the vaccine. Yeah. I'm going to talk to Ted Walsh now.
Is he there?
Well, I'm going to let him right in right now. It's beautiful. Exciting. Yeah. Anyway, that's today's vaccine rant. Once we establish a connection with Ted Walshin, we can move on. Ted Walshin is connecting to audio, and any second now, the happy face. You think Ted will connect to his camera? Ted, can you hear us?
Still trying to figure it out.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Beautiful. There we go.
Ted Walshin, do you want to turn your camera on?
I didn't know it was off.
Yeah, just on the left-hand side of this Zoom thing, it says stop video. There you are.
There he is.
There you go.
Hello. There you go. There's our friend. There's our good man.
How are you guys?
You know, for many, many years, this gentleman, where, as I said earlier in the show, Fred's worked with him. I've worked with him. Both of us have worked with him and have been friends of his, whether it's at golf tournaments or in the world of stand-up comedy. You've known this man's name for over 400 years in the GTA.
Yes. That's all?
That's all. Please say hi to our good friend, Ted Walshin. Look at you. Yeah, that's Phil. You better applaud, Phil. How dare you? Hi, Teddy. How you doing, man?
I'm okay, thanks. How are you doing?
We're good. We were just talking about you.
I heard.
Are you a long hauler? Is that what people call you, a long hauler? I'm not talking about radio. I'm talking about the COVID.
No. Well, because I had COVID? No. Yeah. I don't really have any lasting effects. I never really lost my sense of smell or sense of taste.
How did you know you had it?
Well, I tested positive for it, and then about a week later, I started experiencing breathing problems. I mean, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I thought, well, this isn't good, because I was doing this rapid breathing. So I called an ambulance, went into the hospital. I spent 10 days in the hospital. At first, I thought it was pneumonia, and then they figured out, no, it's not. So thank God I didn't have to go to intensive care or do the intubation thing, which was very fortunate, but it was hell, let me tell you.
Okay, so you were tested before you got the symptoms? Is this the timeline?
Yes.
Why did you get tested?
Because a friend of mine got it, and I thought, well, if he got it, there's a chance that I might have it. And I was about 4 days before getting my first shot. Mind you, it wouldn't have done any good if I'd had it anyway, because it takes like 2 weeks before the first one even kicks in, the effects, the positive effects. So
I want to talk about it. We're going to get to broadcasting and all that stuff, but we two things that came up. One is the rumors of your demise apparently were overblown, but 10 days in the hospital and you were very, very ill. At some point, any point in that 10 days, did you think, you know, this might be it for me?
I didn't think that, but apparently they did. There was, I guess my doctor told me later that the first couple of days I was in there, they were going waffling back and forth as to whether or not to ship me into ICU. But then I started recovering. So every day I started feeling a little bit better and better. So I was on oxygen all the time, just the tubes, until about the last day or so before I went home. They took me off the oxygen. They didn't want to send me home with oxygen. And so they weaned me off it, and then they sent me home. So, at any time, no, I didn't really think. There was one night, actually, where they had to give me a bag because my breathing became sporadic. But that lasted for about an hour, and then other than that, it was okay. I felt like, you know, I mean, I lost probably in the course of the 10 days that I was there, and maybe the half week before and about a half a week after, I lost about 30 pounds. I came out of the hospital, I weighed 142 pounds.
Wow.
What? You?
142, yeah. I'm now at about 178.
So in those moments where they had the bag, as you described it, that has to be pretty scary, because obviously you're equipped with the respiratory problems that COVID represents, and the bag, and then, you know, eventually maybe a ventilator. So that moment must have been terrified when they're considering the next step of dealing with your respiratory problem.
Yeah, that was. So that one night, that was probably my third night in, I think. Something like that. Third, maybe fourth night in. But again, it only lasted for about an hour or so, and then I went back to the oxygen. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't eat. I mean, I had no appetite, really. I mean, I felt hungry, but I didn't really have any appetite, per se. And then, of course, the food in the hospital, God bless them, they were all terrific, but the food is just god awful.
Yeah.
Just terrible.
So
nothing tasted, it's so bland, because they have to make it bland in the hospital, because, you know, there's too many people are just food sensitive, right?
Right. Getting back to that 10 days, and when you reflect on it now, and we just spent about half an hour talking about the insanity of the anti-vax movement and all these people that this pandemic has revealed so much about our collective character as human beings. What does it feel like to you, having gone through it, knowing the thing is real, knowing the effects are devastating, can be fatal? What does it feel like when you hear about these people saying, oh, you know, my body, my immunity, and people protesting in front of hospitals?
The people protesting in front of hospitals, I was talking to a friend about that yesterday. I mean, you're stopping people from coming in who are coming in for cancer treatments. She was telling me about a friend of hers who was going in for cancer treatments and had to get escorted in by the police because there were protesters. And I thought, well, you know, people like that, they're overqualified for hell. They won't get into hell because they're too qualified. Like, that's totally unconscionable. I mean, I don't get that at all. Yeah. I mean, it's just, if you don't want to get vaxxed, okay, I understand that you don't want to get vaxxed, but stay at home, stay away from everybody, because you're gonna kill somebody. And literally, they're responsible for murdering people.
And, you know, and that's the thing. You know, it's all about freedom of choice. We agree. So if you choose not to get vaxxed, then you are now choosing not to be part of mainstream society now. So deal with it. So a few minutes ago said you touched on how awful it was. Describe the feeling of having COVID as compared to anything else you've ever had.
Well, I suppose it's the closest thing I could describe it to would be like, it's kind of a cross between having a flu and getting hit by a car at the same time.
Hmm.
Like physically, you're weak, you're tired. You're not really in control of bodily functions, if I can put it to you that way.
Oh, you can. Really? This is the Humble and Fred Show, Ted. Don't be afraid.
You know, well, okay. It's 8:30 in the morning. I don't want to get too graphic.
Yeah, well,
I
don't care.
What was that, Fred?
I was going to say maybe I have early COVID. But anyway,
Fred sometimes gets COVID after is it? What kind of food is it after dim sum? Sometimes you'll have to stop on the way home with some COVID.
Right. Yeah, and draft beer.
I'm sorry. I digress.
Please continue, Ted. You're very serious topic.
It's like a feeling of a flu in terms of how weak you are, but I also felt like physically pained. Like, you know, like you're sore, you're uncomfortable, and well, first of all, I mean, I'm 6'4" and the hospital beds are not meant for people over 6 feet. They're not comfortable mm-hmm. sleeping. So that doesn't help either. So that's what it is. It's like a combination of feeling like you're physically beat up, like as though somebody had been beating you. And on top of that, the same feeling as a flu, where you're just so exhausted and pained.
So as someone that's actually, so when you hear people talk about it not being real, or it's just like a flu, or it must drive you bananas.
It does. It does. I mean, I have a friend who doesn't buy it. And I said, listen, you don't want to go through this. Trust me, you don't want to go through this, because I bet you've never felt this bad in your life.
So what do you tell that friend who's like, listen, man, this is such a psychosis. We were talking about a story yesterday. People on their way to being intubated in the States still not believing that COVID is real.
Yeah.
So I guess your friend's like, well, Ted, maybe you had a...
Well, but it's just conspiracy theories. I think I have a relative who has a son who's one of these QAnon morons who really believes that Fauci is making money off every needle that gets jabbed into somebody's arm.
Yeah.
And I said, nobody is that organized. To get that, their stuff together to even figure out how to do that.
You know, Tony Clement said that when he was on our show, Ted, you know, the whole plandemic thing, like this is a government conspiracy.
Yeah.
As Tony Clement said to us, he said, you're giving government way too much credit.
That's right.
I mean, we can't organize a piss up at a saloon. They think we can organize this.
That's right.
It's true.
You know, I love, though, is this whole thing in the States of Fauci's making money off every jab. Meanwhile, their president, the former guy, was selling steaks in university, and everything was shown to be a scam, provably, but somehow they ignore that. You know, it's the same reason these people are still giving money to the evangelical guys who are trying to get a different jet. Ted Walsh, and so I'm glad you're well, and
thank you.
We wanted to say hi to you. We were talking about the timeline of your time at CFRB. So you were the morning guy there, we believe, from 96 to 2006.
Yeah. 10 years.
10 years.
Right after Wally Croder.
Right. You were the guy after Wally, and then in 2006, you moved on, and then you had an association with Standard Broadcasting.
I came back and did another 10 years. I did a show on Saturday afternoon,
right,
which ended in February of this past February. After that was in the night of the Long Knives, and Bell Media, I think they let go something like 210 people in Ontario over the course of a week.
Yeah, just after their Bell Let's Talk Day, they were like, okay, we'll make sure we support mental health, and we'll fire everybody.
Your Saturday show, Howard and I appeared on that one day. Remember?
Yes, we did.
They were going to, they played the show in evenings on News Talk. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was there for 10 years, and then that ended. But I was very grateful to Mike Bendixson and people there. It was a real great experience. There's a lot of really talented people there. But it's the state of the industry today. I mean, it's just it's bean counter world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So when you, 1996, Wally Croder, he had been there, what, close to 50 years or something at CFRB?
Yeah.
You know, they often say that, you don't want to be the guy following the legend. You want to be the guy that follows the guy that follows the legend. Yeah, yeah. That how that was, those were pretty big shoes to fill. Like, that was, I'm sure it wasn't a huge decision to take the job because it was a great job, but to follow Wally Crowder had to be pretty difficult.
It was, well, you know what made it easier, Fred, honestly, Wally was great about the whole thing. Wally was very supportive of me. He used to come to me, you know, all the time and say, well, do you know if they said anything. And I know that he went to Gary and Alan Slade, and he said, I think Ted should be the guy. And of course, management never bases their decision on any personnel's thoughts. It's their own thoughts. But he was very accommodating. He was great. And when I got the job, he was terrific, and I kept in touch with him. So that made it a lot easier. But it was difficult at the same time because they still wanted to keep elements of Wally's show. Like, I had to do this thing called Wally's Thought of the Day, where they ran this thing at the end of my show, right? When I saw it, I was like, well, it's kind of my show, right? Mike Harris said to me, he says, you know, Ted, he says, I don't know why they're doing that. He says, it'd be like me showing up to my office now that I'm premier and Bill Davis is sitting outside.
That's right.
So I can talk to him before I go in.
You know, we have a story like that. When we were doing Mojo Radio, we would do the morning show, and then John Derringer would come on for an hour.
That's right.
After our show on Mojo, and the entire hour promote his morning show the next morning on Q107.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember the first time we said to our management, don't you think that's a bit odd that the morning guy we're competing against, we have to do a crossover with, it's an industry term, we have to talk to this guy at 5 to 9. What do you got coming up on the show today, John? Well, Howard, I'll be promoting my Q107 morning show for the next 60 minutes, and fuck you tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
But apparently, strange. Ted, only we could see how weird that was.
I know, so, and I don't get it. Like, it's like, does the management is like, do they think this is cool for some reason? I don't get it.
Did you win that battle?
Eventually, they stopped running it, yeah. Eventually.
Yeah.
They did.
Yeah.
But it took a while. And the thing is that the station was in a period of transition because when Wally was there, they were still playing music in the morning.
Yes.
And they were just going from music and some talk to all talk. All news talk, right? And so that took a little bit of time. And John Stahl was on the show with me in the morning. He was doing the news. And he would do most of the interviews. And at one point, you know, we had a staff meeting with the with Val Geller, who was our consultant, a brilliant woman.
Yeah, I remember her.
She went around the table and asked everybody, well, what do you do at the radio station? And they came to me and said, what do you do? And I said, I introduce people. That's what I was doing. You know, and eventually I said, well, why don't you let me do the interviews? Why do I have to introduce somebody else doing the interview? And so eventually it took a while before it became my show. Probably about a year, I would say, something like that.
But, you know, I want to get back to the, you know, because I'm trying to think if, and all the morning shows I've ever followed, I don't think I ever never followed someone with the legacy of Wally Crowder.
Well, I mean, Wally Crowder's are there.
Exactly. And so were you nerve? I think Fred asked it, but I was curious. Those first few shows, you've been a broadcaster in 96 for a long time. But still, you know, I think about Conan and those guys when they get the Tonight Show. It must be just nerve-wracking. The first few shows on the air.
Well, because you got to think that people are listening in, they're sort of listening with two ears. In one ear, they're still hearing Wally. And in the other ear, they're listening to me. And somewhere in between, they're putting the two up against each other and thinking, well, he's not Wally. Well, of course I'm not Wally. I can't be Wally. And I couldn't be Wally. I wasn't going to try to be like Wally because that would be impossible. And I kept telling people, I said, listen, I'm not taking over for Wally. I just happen to be following him.
Right.
You know, you can't take over for him.
And here's the significance of that. Ted, you grew up in Toronto like I did. When we were kids, you listened to Wally Crowder or Jay Nelson or whoever was doing the 10:50 Chum morning show. There was literally just two stations. FM hadn't become established. CKEY was out there. But the thing is, Wally would have had what share of the market? Like, everybody,
I think at one point he had like a 40 share or something,
guys,
ridiculous like that.
And now if you have a 5 or 6, you're doing pretty well. And
yeah,
so that's for you sitting there, you know, with that in your head, that's part of, you know, your Toronto history and how you grew up and the impact this guy had.
Yeah.
again, that's a lot of responsibility.
Well, yeah, and it dawned on me at one point. I thought, well, I'm never going to have those kinds of numbers because, first of all, there are now five more stations than there were 10 years ago.
Right.
And they kept adding and adding and adding stations, yeah, and the pie keeps getting sliced thinner and thinner, thinner slices, right? So there's no way you're going to have that kind of power over the market anymore. That it wasn't going to happen. And also because he had so much time in service that there's no way I was going to be able to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
So you realize, well, this is not going to be the way it was. On top of that, we're going through a transition, the station going from music to talk. We were constantly battling. The management was, anyway, who's our competitor? Are we fighting 680 News? Are we fighting CBC? Who is it that we're going up against here? So one day it's like, well, 680 is our main competitor. And then it's like, well, no, it's CBC. Well, those are two totally different formats.
Yeah. You know, guys, at one time, you want to talk about, I remember this coming to town and being a bit of a radio geek. And somebody told me, it might have even been Valerie Geller, who I actually, of all the consultants we've had over the years, she's really the one or two that were just really a decent person and, you know, never really got in our way too much. But she's, I think somebody told me, Wally Crowder at one time had the highest quarter hour in North America, bigger than L.A., bigger than New York, because those markets had way more radio stations. So Wally's 8 o'clock quarter hour was humongous. I mean, a couple and 300,000 people, which always fascinated me.
Yeah. No, he did have those. Because I remember looking back on some of the books that they had and looking at the numbers and thinking, well, this is impossible.
No, I know.
It's not going to happen. Yeah. Well, unless I go out and shoot everybody.
You know, I used to do that. I'd sit at a traffic light and look around and think, I wonder when we were at CFNY, I wonder how many of those radios are on CFNY. And it would have been a small percentage, obviously. But back in the 60s, if you pulled up to a red light, the vast majority of those cars had CFRB. All those people that you were looking at were listening to the same thing.
Ted, just give us a second, if you don't mind, we could indulge your patience. Ted Wallachin, guys, do you know who he is, Phil? Do you have any idea?
He's the Gig Sky guest of the day.
Ted is the Gig Sky guest of the day. That's right. Gig Sky's latest service offering includes mobile data while you're flying. What are we, in the future? Yes. When traveling on selected airlines and routes, you can get mobile data. Go to gigsky.com/aeromobile to see the list of partner airplanes. You know, now that people are starting to figure out that they can travel again, even other further restrictions are about to be lifted. Don't forget to get your Gig Sky data plans for your travel needs. Whether you're off to the tropics, heading to Europe, or just plan to make your way down south, you'll need mobile data to keep you connected. Download the Gig Sky app for Android or iOS and get affordable coverage in over 190 countries. Did you know that, Phil? Did you know it? All Gig Sky data plans are prepaid. No contracts or recurring fees. Download the app today. Enter the code HF2021 for $5 off your first plan or go to gigsky.com. And now we continue with the Gig Sky guest of the day, Theodore Wallachin. Hello, sir.
Hey, Ted. To back up a bit, because I want to... I read the article yesterday about Joe Warmington thinking you were dead, and then and before publishing it, talking to a few people and them saying, no, Ted hasn't died. Did you read anything? Was there anything out there that said Ted Wallachin is dead and you read it?
I didn't, not that I knew of. I got a call from Joe and he said, listen, because he had heard it, and I guess he had contacted Mike Bendixson at the station. And Mike said, no, it's not true. And then I guess John Moore went on the air and said, listen, there's a story going around and Ted's not. He's out of the hospital and he's recovering and he's doing bed. And so Joe called me because he wanted to do a story on it. And I said, OK, because he said, listen, he says, I'm hearing this from a number of different sources. And I said, no, I hadn't heard that. But interestingly enough, either that day or the day after, I got a call from Hazel McCallion, the former mayor of Mississauga, who said to me, she said, Ted, it's Hazel. I got a call from my son, and he said to me, you better check and find out because I heard Ted Wallachin died. So she called me. She said, so I'm glad you're not dead. And I said, no, actually, I'm not. Thank you, Hazel. And then after I hung up from the phone, I thought, There's something disconcerting about having a 100-year-old person ask you if you're dead. You know?
True, man, true.
Okay, I didn't hear anything about it, but after I thought about it and after Joe told me, I thought, well, that is kind of weird.
Well, what's really weird about that call is she actually is dead and called you from the afterlife.
Yeah, that's right. I saw her a couple of weeks ago, actually. She's very much alive.
Yeah. What about you, sir? You said your Saturday show, your popular weekend, it was a really interesting format, too, because you were on for like 5 or 6 hours.
We were on at one point. Originally, we were on for like 3 hours or whatever, and then I got cut down. And
oh, okay.
Went from 4 hours to 3 hours to 2 hours.
And now I'm reading in my notes here.
To no hours,
yeah. They've really got you back. The notes we have is that you are, like a lot of us, we're interested in the world of podcasting.
Yes. Yes, we just launched, actually today is our second episode. With Lloyd Robertson.
You're doing a podcast with Lloyd Robertson, just the two of you?
He's our guest today.
Oh, I see. Yes. Oh, okay. Very nice.
It's a different guest every week. And the first one we did it with Chef Massimo Capra.
Nice.
Who's a fascinating guy. He's a really, really nice man. So then Lloyd Robertson is our guest for today, which we pre-taped before.
Yeah.
Obviously, as you know.
So you plan to put it out once a week?
Once a week, yeah. And we drop it on Thursdays. Yeah, once a week right now. We may extend it to longer than that, but right now it's once a week. I love the format because it's like, I mean, as you know, right, you don't have to break at any particular time. An interview can go 15 minutes or it can go 40 minutes or it can go 8 minutes. I mean, back when I was doing the Saturday show, it was essentially here you got 12 minutes here, you got 9 minutes here. Mm-hmm. And if you get a stiff guest who's only good for 4 minutes, as you know, you get those sometimes, and now you got to turn 4 into 9, or mm-hmm. you got a guest who could do 20, and you got to cut it down to 12. So it's a pain, but this way you can do whatever you want, mm-hmm. and assemble a commercial block whenever you want it to be there, and you don't have to break at 15 minutes because traffic's coming up, and all those other parameters. It's like walking down a narrow hallway now that I think about it. Now that I've done a couple of podcasts, it's just like, my God, this is so much more liberating.
And fun.
And fun.
Yeah.
That's what is we it called found. The Ted Wallison Show, or does it have some other...
Ted Wallison podcast, yeah.
And, oh, and it's just like about anything? Like, you'll interview anybody from any genre, sports, news, anything?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, coming up, we got Ron James, the comedian, is going to be on.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Murray McLaughlin. I already did an interview with John Biner. Remember John Biner?
Yeah, of course, from Bizarre.
Bizarre. About 100 episodes of The Tonight Show, and yeah. I think he was on Sullivan about 30 times as well. He's a fascinating guy. And Terry O'Reilly does a great podcast called Under the Influence.
Yep.
It's a CBC show. He's a radio guy or an advertising guy.
Yeah.
He's coming on the show in the future as well.
So Terry's one of the few people that has been doing a podcast might even predate ours. Maybe not our very first one, but we're about to celebrate 10 years of putting out a podcast four or five times a week. And Terry's podcast, which began as a CBC show, I remember listening to it before they called them podcast. He's I've done some voiceover stuff for him, but he's a really interesting cat.
Yeah.
Well, good for you.
Well, he's got a new book out where it's called, My Big Mistake, or no, My Best Mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about these different individuals and how they screwed up, but how their mistakes led to positive things. It's really good, and so I'm looking forward to chatting with him. You should have him on.
Yeah, he would be a good guy. Well, everyone else you mentioned, I think including Lloyd, have actually done this show. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could actually speak to that. I mean, we went to the mix in 2003, and that mistake turned into this. So,
yeah.
Not well, bad. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Ted, when you get up in the morning, do you turn the radio on?
Occasionally. Yeah, not always.
Mm-hmm.
Not always.
To John Moore, or would it be something else?
Yeah, I'll listen to John. I listen to everything, because I want to know mm-hmm. I want to know what's going on. I mean, if there's something intense going on in sports, like we're in the middle of a pennant battle or whatever, mm-hmm. I might turn on one of the sports stations to see. Mm-hmm. Find out what happened the night before, and sometimes I'll watch television in the morning. So the mm-hmm. morning news, either the U.S. stations or the Canadian mm-hmm. morning shows. And so sometimes I don't listen to anything.
Yeah, Wally Crowder never had to battle with TV in the morning.
No, But it hadn't been invented yet.
No.
Hey, Ted, you mentioned that you gained your weight back, and you're back sort of where you, even though you're six.
Close.
How are you feeling? Okay now? You feel well?
I'm feeling fine. Yeah, I'm feeling fine. It took a while. I mean, it was. When I got out of the hospital, I was sleeping like four or five times a day. I'd be up for about an hour or two. I'd have something to eat, and then about an hour or so later, I'd start to feel myself fading, and I'd be napping. I felt like my granddaughter when she was like 7 months old. Well, she's napping again. Here we go again. Time to nap. So my friends would be calling me, and I'd go, well, listen, I'm just about to sleep. Okay, go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a while.
On that point, this grandfather thing, there's nothing better, eh?
Oh, that's fabulous. My granddaughter just turned two, and it's just...
Wow.
My daughter and my son-in-law just moved to Guelph, so I go to visit them once a week. And whenever I leave, I'm overcome with this feeling of sadness because I'm leaving her there, right?
Aww.
Which is so bizarre because it's 40 minutes away from my house. It's not like I'm flying across the country, but I can see her like anytime I want, really. But I mean, that's how much of an influence she's had on me.
I know you got to become and I've got two of them, and it's like you gotta become a grandparent to really know what that feeling's like. I mean, I still really can't explain it. It's
how many children?
It's different.
You got?
Two, one of each, and
how old are
eight,
they?
Eight and six. So I've had lots of fun with them over the past few years, but it really is something else.
Yeah, it is.
People
tell me, they say you won't know what it's like until you experience it, and they're right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've sort of lived vicariously through Fred for the last 8 years. I still remember the day we finished our show in our other studio. I think you actually came to visit us there. After the show was over, we were working on some production, and then Fred sort of said, hey, by the way, Melanie's pregnant, and I got emotional. You know what I mean? And it was his daughter. Ted Wallachin, you are always welcome here. We want everyone to go and find the Ted Wallachin podcast. Or as John Moore might say, the eponymously named, because he's the only one I've ever heard use that term. But
yes, I know. I have to carry my thesaurus and my dictionary with me whenever I listen to him.
Sometimes I listen to John Moore, I go, I love words, but I have no idea what that one means. Ted Wallachin's podcast, available where you get podcasts, and hopefully you continue with good health and happiness, and you're always welcome. Thanks for taking a few minutes with your old buddies here today.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's really
right,
fun.
Oh, no,
great to see you, Ted.
It's amazing. It's fantastic when people come on this show. Take care, my friend.
You too.
Just let yourself out of the room. Phil, Dan Duran's news is coming up here in a second. But Freddie, Ted mentioned a pennant run. Of course, the Blue Jays are... They're still in the race here, but the odds are getting better or getting worse.
Well, it depends on who they're playing. I mean, as far as odds making the playoffs, they're still in there. They dropped out of a playoff position last night because they lost yesterday afternoon in Tampa Bay 7-1, and the Yankees won and the Bo Sox won, I believe. Jays start a series in Minnesota this weekend. Bit of a concern. The Twins playing very well lately, and you know, they've got some big bats. The Jays have to keep winning to hang in there. Today's game against the Twins in Minnesota, the Jays are the favorite, -1.5, okay? And tonight's line has changed on the Thursday night football game. Carolina now an 8-point pick, up from 7.5, okay?
Yeah, your fan just kicked in again. Something just kicked in, or is that Dan Duran?
Must be.
Not okay, me. There was a huge noise of just... okay,
it might
sorry
be his hot
that.
Tub. It might be his hot tub.
Is Dan doing the show in his hot tub today?
No, you can hear it. I can hear it in my place. Oh, yeah. Whether you're a sports bettor, a horse racing fan, a poker, casino player, Bodog is your number one source of online gambling entertainment. From their industry-leading odds, world-class sportsbook, and feature-rich poker room to their fully loaded casino and racebook, they've been providing Canadian players with an unparalleled gaming experience since 1994. We encourage you, I mentioned the Jays and the Thursday night football game. If you'd like to wager on these individual sports, it's bodog.eu/sports. It's all there. bodog.eu/sports.
It was interesting talking to Ted Wallachin about his health. You know, whether you're old guys like us, or you're just somebody interested in keeping track of your own personal health, whether it's monitoring your steps or calories burned, we recommend Health Gauge. I think you've heard us talk about it. HealthGauge.com. I'm wearing the Health Gauge Phoenix. So is Fred. So is Niblet. So should you, by the way. You want to check your blood pressure? You want to check your heart rate? Or your pulse wave velocity? I wish you would. And explain to me what that means. Go to HealthGauge.com. I got an alert the other day. I didn't even realize I'd activated this option. I got an alert to drink water. And it was weird because I looked down at my phone, which is tied to my watch. And I'm like, what does that mean, Howard? And it was Dan. It was a thing that said to drink water.
So it somehow detects whether or not you put water in your system?
Yeah. And I thought, how does this watch is a miracle. This watch knows I'm thirsty. So go get it up and go get it, set it up. And once again, you can, it's on your phone, it's on your computer, it's in the cloud. You can share the information with your healthcare professionals. HealthGauge.com, promo code is HumbleFred15 for 15% off at checkout. So why don't you check it out by going to HealthGauge.com. In the meantime, let's sing along.
Gander and the Eggerman comes, as asks for credentials, he has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dander and the Eggerman's here. He's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care, and his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
And now live from a trailer not 30 yards from Fred. Dan's got his curtains closed today, so Fred can't come looking in while Dan does his Dan Duran things. Now, speaking of a big bat, here's Anchorman.
We're all isolated.
Here's Anchorman Dan Duran.
Okay. Today is National Energized Day. Huh? To celebrate, look inside yourself and figure it out. There are places you shouldn't put your penis in, but more important, there are things you shouldn't put in your penis. A USB cable is one of them.
Yeah, I saw that.
A UK kid wanted to measure the length of his one-eyed trousers snake, and then had to go to emergency to have the USB cable with a knot in it removed because he couldn't get it out himself.
I don't know if you guys have seen this, but go look it up because they have the X-ray of this guy's wiener. And it's, as Dan described, when I saw it, and I just saw the headline, he's trying to measure his dink. What kind of, we'll call him an idiot, what kind of kid is so dumb that he needs to measure it from the inside?
I don't know. I didn't see the X-ray.
He stuffed it down his pee hole.
Are the connectors in there too? Like the end? Or did he take the ends off and just put the cord down? The actual connector USB thing? Is
I
it
think
in
the
there
USB
well?
Connector is actually in there, isn't it, Dan?
I didn't see the X-ray either. But we should maybe further investigate this.
Well, all I'm telling you.
If it had a knot in it, just think of a cable with a knot in it.
Listen, let's not pretend there's anyone on this Zoom call except for Phil that hasn't measured their wiener, but not from the inside. Dan, when you first measured yours, was there a cable around the farm big enough for...
to put up...
Dan, what are you doing with that binder twine? Well, Grandpa... Hey, by the way, there was a story this morning out of Edson, Alberta, which is just west of Edmonton. I couldn't remember the small town you grew up in. Which was it?
Well, the town I grew up in was Didsbury.
Didsbury.
Which is south of Edmonton.
Were they having COVID parties like the people in Edson?
I haven't heard, yeah. Well, Edson is really close to Hinton.
Yeah.
Edson and Hinton are on the way to Jasper, right?
Oh, yeah.
You gotta head out west from Edmonton, yeah. Drove through that town. And it's a smelly area, too. They've got one of those pulp paper mill things there.
Oh, right, oh, right, yeah. Yes.
Really, really a smelly zone of the world when you drive through that area.
Now with more news and views, with his second story, here's Dan DeRue.
Well, here's your COVID crazy update. Watch out for salad vaccines. Michael Flynn, Trump's former U.S. national security advisor for 22 days, has pushed a new conspiracy theory. They're putting vaccines in your greens, apparently. Here's what he said. Mm-hmm. Somebody sent me a thing this morning where they're talking about putting the vaccine into salad dressings or salads. I'm thinking to myself, this is a bizarro world, right? Right? Mm-hmm. Right?
Michael Flynn calling it a bizarre world.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
You know, not to get too deep into this, but I saw a report, and yes, it was on CNN, and they're awful and fake news and all that nonsense, apparently. But just think about that. Michael Flynn, he was national security advisor, has that going on in his brain, how dangerous that is.
Yeah, I'd say.
And right now, the Republicans in key swing states are working to get Trumpers in as governors or attorney generals or whatever, the ones that call the elections, right?
Yep.
One way or the other, are they valid, are they not, should there be recalls? So already they're trying to put these people in position to really circumvent democracy if it comes to that.
No, I know.
That's what's going on there. Like, wow.
And wow, again, one of the things I've learned, speaking of, we're talking about how great John Moore's vocabulary is. I think what we've all learned and we're experiencing is a visceral example of gaslighting, because what you just described, if you put people in places so that you can seed doubt and disruption for the electoral process, aren't you actually doing what you're accusing the other people of doing? That's gaslighting.
Yeah. It's disturbing.
Here's what's disturbing. I think the poll I read last week is 80%, up from 65 or 70% in January. Now more people in the Republican Party believe the election was stolen. And you know what? Those people in charge had a chance in January to say, okay, you know, enough's enough.
Mm-hmm.
We've all been in politics for a long time. McConnell and that other jowly fucker. What's his name? Lindsey fuckface.
Lindsey Graham.
Yeah, he's a jolly fucker. All those guys. All those guys have been in politics a long time, and they all knew the election was just like every other election. But they chose a path, and as I said to you earlier in the show, they chose a path where we're never coming back from.
Mm-hmm. Although, and they're also terrified of, do you not think, though, if Trump was taken out of the picture, it would be better?
Yeah, I don't think the movement's going away, though.
Yeah.
They've been shown the way.
Yeah.
They've been shown that it can actually work if you don't, you know, if you have no morals or ethics.
Just wondered if there's any buildings, towers, big trees around Mar-a-Lago where somebody could get the crosshairs just set properly. But I digress.
Calling for the assassination of a former president, I digress.
No. It's fantasy. It's fiction. I'm thinking of writing a book.
Are you?
I didn't use any names. Yeah.
Depression number 18 is coming our way, so maybe it'll just hit Mar-a-Lago just the right way.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Dan Duran. Dan Duran's news, as always, a highlight on this program.
Yeah.
Do you want to?
By the way, Fred's boat didn't sink last night.
Aren't you guys putting the boat away?
Soon. Yeah, I bailed it yesterday, Dan.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah,
I did.
I've got it.
Thanks for asking.
So far, we have a half a canoe worth of water for me.
Yeah, it's crazy. Won't stop.
It could have been the noise you were hearing earlier.
What is that song? I ain't the guy that sailed the boat. I ain't the guy that sailed her.
I
was the guy that
sailed the boat.
I sabai.
Yep, I sabai who catches the fish.
I's the bai.
Is it ISO
by? I can't find that song. It's too bad. Oh. I don't know the name of it. Does it even have a name?
Well, it's a shanty, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. I can't help you. I know the song, but I don't know the official name.
All right. Well,
ISO by. Great Big Sea sang a version of that.
Oh, okay.
All right. Hey, speaking of the guy right there, look at him. It's Mike Boone. It's Mike Boone. I think we're all familiar with Mike Boone by now, who is our producer. But he's also the host of Toronto Mic'd Podcast. Did you guys know that? I do, because I follow him on the social media.
Oh, very nice.
Look at him. Mm-hmm. Look at him with his Jaws t-shirt. He's so fucking cool. God damn it, Boone. You're looking good these days, Boone, with your bouffant hair and your coolness, you know?
Trying to keep up with you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you'll never do that.
Why, are your tits starting to sag, too? Are you getting some, saggy tits?
When I look back at the 10-year legacy of your podcast, that's one of the highlights when Fred had his tits removed.
Yes. Yes.
That's right. That's when he did that parody song, Tit Removal Machine.
No, it was. It was great. And no, I, you know what? That was a great experience from the standpoint of actually losing those two hunks of flabs on my chest.
So they never grew back? Like, they're still...
Not really. Maybe a bit. As I gain weight, there's a little more there. But generally, no, not... Because when you have them, you're somewhat conscious of them. And I've been unconscious ever since it happened.
Well, I got to tell you, as a in my medical career, in my medical history, being in the operating theater, as we call it, for Fred's tit removal surgery was one of the highlights of my surgical career. It was quite something to be there while Fred was unconscious. And I was there with the doctor, and he was like hoovering the tit juice out. Oh, it was quite a day.
You know, what a way to...
You know, I've had two significant sort of surgery type things happen, and both times it was compared to a bottle of wine. Because remember, doctor who did my boob job, what was his name again?
I can't remember. He did yours.
Phil would remember.
He did yours and lady friends.
But he said, like, he took like 750 milliliters out of each side, I believe, and said it was like a bottle of wine on each side. And then
Dr.
when
Slatehome.
Dr. Slatehome, right. That's right.
And then when I had my TURP procedure, prior to that, when he put the monitor on me and I wasn't getting rid of all my urine out of my bladder, the doctor looked at me and he said, you have 750 milliliters of urine in you. That's a bottle of wine. Both times that was used.
I thought what you were going to say is you've had the TURP, the tits, you had a back surgery and eye surgery, two of your four big surgeries lifetime. I was actually in the operating room for. I was there when you got your eyes done.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not just somebody that pretends to like all things medical. When they said to me, you can be in the room when Fred gets his tit juice removed, I'm like, sign me up. I had the thing. I had the gown on. I had the thing over here. I was watching. You know, it's weird when you see somebody you know completely unconscious and having a wand suck out their breast goo.
Oh, yeah. I know. If I had to have a section of my colon removed, would you watch that?
Absolutely. I'd be right in there.
We'd live stream that.
I'd live stream that to get my garden shares. Anyway, it was
isn't
fascinating.
There something unethical about that as a medical professional yourself, Howard, that, you know, that a close personal friend that you're, you know, assisting?
Well, I wasn't the actual attending physician, Dan. I just scrubbed in. That's what we say on TV. I just scrubbed in.
Yeah.
You observed.
I just scrubbed in as an observer. I didn't actually perform any hoovering.
Yeah. No, but you'd be standing over me. I might get some spits in me.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I brought in my dill pickle spits. No, it was quite something. And one of the highlights of my medical career.
And let me ask you this, honestly. When you were in there, was there any like trepidation on your part? Did you feel woozy at all? Was this like, oh, okay, there's just that's some... You know, whenever you saw it coming out of Fred.
it's a great question because it looked like, you know what it looked like? It just looked like sort of a similar consistency to firm yogurt that was covered in like strawberry juice, right? So it was just like blood and yogurt and fat. And it was just, this is great. Dan, I was in the hospital the night you had your nose cut off. And I was there as an attending physician. I was consulting.
I remember that.
And I remember looking at your nose, and it was horrific because I could see the white cartilage in Dan's nose.
Which I never saw. Yeah.
Which you never saw. And I thought, wow, that's Dan's fucking nose cartilage. Now I really know him.
For those who don't know, I had a chainsaw accident. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think most people know by now you tried to cut off your own nose.
Yeah. Despite my face.
Despite your own giant face.
Howard Glassman.
Yes, Mike Boone, questions.
Now, around the same time that Freddie was getting his tits lopped off there, you got your hair plugs done, right?
I did. I had another transplant from the same... Did I get it from the same guy? I think I did.
I think so.
Yes.
So my question is, because we never... You know, we don't get any updates on this. Like,
look
did
at it.
Hold?
It's fucking
okay, I don't remember what it was like before.
I was thinning, and now it's less thinning.
Okay,
it's a miracle, really.
So you did three things in that time period. You did the Fred's breast came out. They went inside, lady friend, and then you got your hair done.
It was actually by a different guy. It was a guy named Dr. Robert Jones. Slatehome did Fred's boobs, and he took the juice out of Fred's titties, and he put it in lady friend.
Right. One procedure, just like she was lying beside
it. It was quite the transplant.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. All right, Boone, what's on the and can you stick around for a minute or two after our Thursday show meeting?
Yeah, absolutely. What, so I do want to tell everybody that,
yes,
and I've been trying to make these reminders on Facebook, but not all your listeners are on Facebook. So October 14th at 7 p.m., if you're listening to the podcast, pause it and go to your calendar app or your reminder, you know, software, whatever you use to keep track of your life, and put in your calendar that there's a special live episode of Humble and Fred on October 14th at 7 p.m. because we've got a great, like, 10th anniversary spectacular lined up for you, and it's going to be live streamed here on Facebook, and then it will drop as usual as a podcast.
Fantastic.
It is fantastic. Like I said, it's going to be something. And I guess we struck out with that guy at the Star because he's not writing an article on us.
I guess so. We'll have to talk after this show.
And my brother asked him, like, do we know, like, should we not contact Toronto Life or Globe and Mail or the Toronto Sun, Joe Warmington? Isn't there a bunch of other?
It can't hurt. None of this hurts. Like, if you've got to connect with Worms.
With the Night Scrawler. Night Scrawler.
I think it's funny if he had called Ted Wallace in and been like, just confirming a story, are you dead? Like, if that was question for Ted.
I went to a horrible, horrible movie last night with Stephen Glassman. It was just terrible. But it was a Marvel movie, so I thought it'll be good. It was Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
Oh, you didn't like that.
It was just so bizarre. But it was kind of cool because I had been to a moving picture show before since COVID. Since the lockdown ended. But it was my first time having to show proof of vaccination.
Right.
In what form did you show it?
I had the receipt from my two doses. I have the receipt. I just screen capped it. Okay. And so you walk in and you show them that, and they look at the government document, and then you show them your ID. And then one of us, in this case, Steve, did a QR code or just wrote. Yeah, you also have to have one person and their contact information. But it was pretty easy, and no one seemed to be, you know, freaking out, and everyone was acting like, hey, this is fine. We're all fine doing this.
No, because normal people like to do their part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You were required to wear your mask walking around inside, and once you sat down at your seat, again, you're allowed to take it off for the popcorn eating and the treats.
Run that by me again about the person, the contact person. What is that you said?
So you need to sign so you show your ID, you show your vaccine receipt, and then you write down your name, one person's name and phone number, or there's a QR code that you can just take a shot of, and it registers that you are who you are, so that if they need to contact you.
Mm-hmm.
We did something that we weren't supposed to do, though. So we had assigned seating, Dan, on the aisle. You know, and then Steven, who is quite the rebel, says, hey, as soon as the movie starts, let's move to the middle. And so we scurry over there with our popcorn. And as soon as just before the movie starts, trailers end, and there's a thing that says, we want to thank you and keep you safe. Please remain in your assigned seating. And of course, everyone just saw us scurry over to the middle. And I'm like, Steve, I said, if they come over, I'm blaming you. And they just say, oh, it was this guy's idea. He forced me. But you're not supposed to.
That's really the best seat, right?
It is, right there.
That's where I go.
What's that, Mike?
I was just pointing out that Albertans like to, you know, buck the rules. Like, they're sort of rebels. They like to just, you know, do it their way.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's my brother, all right.
Although, it isn't, though, really, Howard, because quite a critic of Jason Kenney and the way things have been handled in Alberta.
So he said yesterday.
He really isn't on that side.
No. He said yesterday, did you hear the news? You know, because people in Alberta think we actually keep track of what's going on there. He said, did you hear the news? So-and-so's out. And I'm like, I don't know who that is. He goes, and Kenny's staying in. He's terrible. I'm like, I'll take your word for it.
You know, how that's a great story because, you know, it often happens in sports where a team craps out, so they fire the assistant coaches and not the head coach, like it's their fault. And that's what Jason Kenney did. He fired his chief medical guy instead of leaving himself.
All right, what did you want to say? Do you have something to say?
Nothing. I just thought it'd be easier to hear it from down here.
Oh, okay, because here's Steven now. Yeah, who was that? That mic's not working. Who was the guy that got fired that you thought I should know?
Tyler Shandro, who
Tyler Shandro, the medical health guy.
He moved him to another portfolio.
Yeah. That looks so bad. So Kenny, he's got his feet in the fire, so he fires that guy. It's anyway. Just so bad.
Listen, we've done too much. Mike, tell us who's on the show next week.
Okay, I'll do it really quickly here. Monday, the return of Ron James.
Yes.
Hopefully there's no incident this time. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, we had a good experience with him last time. And in fact, he's on because I reached out to him to congratulate him on his book. And he's like, I said, Ron, let's get you on. This is about a month or so ago, right, Mike?
He was in the calendar. He was already in the calendar, but it was because he has a book person. And then I don't
yes.
think
right.
he didn't. Yeah, so yeah. he didn't reach out to you to congratulate us on 10 years. No,
no, he will when he's on Monday.
Oh, okay.
How would he know we've been on 10 years? No one knows.
How did you know he had a book?
Because I saw it online that he had just finished.
Well, Mike's been putting out online about our 10 years.
Okay, well, why don't you get
tit
mad
for at... Tit for tat.
Fine, why don't you get all mad at Ron James again?
I'm not. I'm just saying. No,
Ron's a sweetheart.
So Ron's on Monday. That's going to be great. Who else next week, Mikey?
On Tuesday, it's the return of Paul Romanuk, and this is because he was going to guest Fred, and then we had to golf instead. So this is he's going to appear Tuesday to talk Beatles and more.
Yeah, so sorry.
Okay. Wednesday is the monthly appearance from Noel Castler.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And to close out the week, the return of Billy Newton Davis. He missed his last appearance, and he's very sorry, and he's coming back to make amends.
All right. Well, looks like it's going to be a great week as usual. Hey, everyone, enjoy your Humble and Fred 3 banger. Dan Duran, thank you for your service. Phil Hong, I hope that everything works out with Mrs. Hong. Just get get a baby on that walk, whatever.
Put it in the steamer basket.
Put it in the steamer basket. That's what I was trying to think of.
Yeah, dumpling.
That's right.
Do you need Humble and Fred to sort of give you instructions how to do that?
Phil? Yeah, can you pass me one of those condoms with your picture on it? Remember there are condoms with your pictures on it?
That won't get you a baby.
Yes, exactly.
That won't get you a baby.
Nothing. Although,
but wait a minute. They're about 30 years old. Maybe they will get you a baby.
They probably will. Yeah,
you could have one of those breakthrough pregnancies. All right. Thank you, everyone. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you on Monday, Phil.
This episode of Humble and Fred is brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Health Gauge, Bodog, and our newest sponsor, Doer, D-E-W-E-R, the world's most comfortable pants. We stream to the planet from the remote headquarters of the Humble and Fred Show. More Humble and Fred tomorrow and online at humbleandfred.com. That was a good